An important part of our Unitarian and Universalist heritage is our tradition of a free pulpit.
It's free.
And a free pew. That means my freedom of the pulpit means that I'm encouraged to preach about whatever I think will be significant and meaningful and hopefully interesting for us to consider. But your freedom of the pew means that you're not expected to believe anything just because it's said from this or any other pulpit. That being said, once a year, members and friends of this congregation contribute all sorts of items and events and opportunities to our annual auction. And each year, one of my auction contributions is to lend my freedom of the pulpit to the highest bidder's choice. So that if there's a sermon topic you've been hoping to hear addressed, our next auction in October could be your chance. Last year, Bob Ladner won the auction sermon, and for the topic, he chose the book, The Dawn of Everything: A New History of Humanity, co-authored by the archaeologist David Wingrow and the late anthropologist David Graeber. Have any of you read this book or maybe heard some interviews? Okay, I see. Bob's read it. Good. So I did see a few hands. I know a few others of you have read this. After reading this book, Bob was particularly interested in the question of what to do when new research has falsified many of the facts that were the basis of our worldview, of, you know, kind of how we thought things came to be, or with the human tendency to generalize important discoveries until they're wrong. So if you like this sermon, thank Bob. It was his idea, and it likely wouldn't have happened otherwise. But if you don't like the specifics, blame me. You just get to pick the topic. You don't get to pick the content of the sermon. And I'll let you in on a little bit of a secret. We ministers get a little anxious sometimes about this whole auctioning sermon topics business. You know, there's always a risk you could end up getting a topic you'll regret, or, you know, biting off more than you can chew or whatever. But I'll say, so far into 11 years of auctioning off sermon topics, I've been grateful and intrigued each time, and this one is no exception. But to be clear, Bob didn't let me off easy. This book does weigh in at around 500 pages. But honestly, it's riveting. It's really, really interesting. It's a book that I'd very much wanted to read when it was published in 2021, but I may have never gotten around to it if I hadn't had the good fortune of Bob assigning it to me. Some of you may remember that I have preached about David Graeber's work once before in a sermon a few years ago titled Alienated Labor, BS Jobs, and the Dream of a 15-Hour Work Week. It was inspired by two of his previous books, Debt, The First 5,000 Years, which is a fascinating but more academic and denser book, as well as a much shorter and more accessible book, BS Jobs. That second book feels all the more relevant today with the massive breakthroughs that we're seeing in artificial intelligence. I suspect Graeber would welcome robots taking over what he calls a lot of BS jobs. Not all jobs are, but some are. Here's just one quote from that book. Huge swaths of people, if they'll be honest with you, spend their days performing tasks they secretly believe do not need to be done. He would target a lot of middle management in this. It's as if someone were out there making up pointless jobs just for the sake of keeping us all working. And he's just not clear that that's such a good use of our human freedom. The moral damage that comes from this situation is profound. It is a scar across our collective soul. Yet virtually no one talks about it. How can you even begin to speak about dignity in labor if one secretly believes one's job shouldn't exist? This perspective, so he started out with an essay about this that just blew up and went viral, and then he wrote a book about it. So this perspective directly relates to our focal book for this morning. Graeber is deeply interested in helping us better understand the story of our human past to help us live more creatively, more imaginatively, more meaningfully in the present and the future. And for this most recent book, this is classic Graeber, like just the ruffled, his hair all messed up, and like the ruffled academic. For this recent book, Graeber, this world-renowned anthropologist pictured on the right, joined forces with David Wingrow, pictured on the left, who's an archaeology professor at University College London. Wingrow's very impressive in his own right, but Graeber's really the superstar. He earned a PhD in anthropology at the University of Chicago, and after teaching at Yale University for almost a decade, he was controversially denied tenure. So you know how we talk about being a good trouble congregation? He caused a little too much good trouble at Yale, and I think they just didn't really want him around, calling them on their BS, basically. But in retrospect, was a huge loss for them, given the international reputation he came to develop. He ended up teaching in what he called academic exile in England, but he did okay. He taught at the London School of Economics for the final decade of his life. His greatest legacy, though, is likely his leadership role in the Occupy Wall Street movement. He is the one coining the slogan, "We are the 99%. If you spend a lot of time hanging out in activist circles, you'll sometimes see T-shirts with his face on it. So it really was a tremendous loss, as some of you may know, that he died of pancreatitis in 2020 at the age of 59. It was just 3 weeks after turning in the final manuscript for this book. This volume alone is monumental, but they had actually planned to write at least 3 sequels. So it truly is a loss. The impetus for the book is similar to the Occupy Wall Street movement. Basically, their contention is that something has gone terribly wrong with the world. A very small percentage of its population control the fates of almost everyone else, and they are doing it in an increasingly disastrous fashion. So what are we going to do about it? Well, one response is the kind of direct action of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Another is this book, which is inviting us to tell a different story, a better story, arguably, about our past as a way of inspiring a better future. So let's get into it. As with the lyrics of our opening hymn, what do the latest findings from anthropology and archaeology tell us about where do we come from? Who are we? And where are we going? On the one hand, the latest social scientific findings have taught us a lot of new and interesting things about deep history. On the other hand, we do need to also be honest that most of human history will always remain irrevocably lost to us. Our species, Homo sapiens, has existed for at least 200,000 years. But for most of that time, we have next to no idea what was happening. You know, we just don't know. Presumably, a lot of dramatic events occurred during that period, but we just have no way of knowing what most of them were unless someone invents a time machine. Probably another terrible idea, right? So for now, let's just take one example, though, as a point of reference, that interesting things were being done by interesting people, even during the Paleolithic period. So say between 25,000 and 10,000 BCE in what we now call northern Spain, we have evidence of fascinating art on cave walls. This art is, you know, tens of thousands of years old, preserved until this very... I love these handprints, right? It's like people are literally reaching out from the past, right? I was here. My life mattered. What a powerful message. You can also see these remarkable depictions of bison. I mean, that's pretty impressive. It's thousands of years before art school was invented, right? And using whatever natural supplies could be scrounged up. So Vingrow and Graeber bring up this example to open our minds about what was the day-to-day reality like during prehistoric times. The story of times before the agricultural revolution have often been told as if our ancestors were all these simplistic, rather similar members of small primitive groups. But our co-authors challenge us to consider there is increasing evidence that for tens of thousands of years, our forebears were diverse groups who engaged in bold social experiments, lived and created community in really interesting and different ways, and resembled what could only really be called a carnival parade of political forms. Anyone who has spent time doing anthropological field work with indigenous people can attest that even those who make their living hunting elephants or gathering lotus buds, they're just as skeptical, they're just as imaginative, just as capable of critical analysis as those who spend their days operating tractors, managing restaurants, or chairing university departments. And as best we can tell, that's been true all the way back. We humans have always been skeptical and creative and imaginative. So the same was true of our ancient ancestors. Accordingly, one of the questions our co-authors invite us to ask is, what if we started treating people from the beginning as the imaginative, intelligent, playful people that they clearly were? Such inquiries might in turn invite us to be more imaginative, creative about the possibilities in our own present and future. And that's part of what Occupy Wall Street was all about. So let me say a bit more about how the story of our prehistory has typically been told. and that our co-authors are trying to complicate. Here in the West, our sense of our ancestors has been deeply shaped by two particularly influential works of political philosophy. First, Thomas Hobbes in 1651, this is Hobbes of Calvin and Hobbes fame, in 1651 wrote a book called Leviathan, and Jean-Jacques Rousseau in 1754 wrote a book called Discourse on the Origins of the Foundations of Inequality Among Mankind. You know, really scintillating stuff. According to Rousseau, our ancient ancestors were primarily small groups in a state of childlike innocence, and that the patriarchy, the bureaucratic state, the military-industrial complex that we would call it today, all of that came as a result of the agricultural revolution. That basically everything was great, and then we started the agricultural revolution, and maybe we'd be better off if so-called civilization had never happened. Hobbes tells a very different version of that story. He contends that our ancient ancestors lived lives that were solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. Some of you may have heard that famous phrase. Instead of civilization being a fall from Rousseau's imagined egalitarian ideal, Hobbes thought that contemporary human society was this tremendous advance over living lives ruled by our basest instincts, lives of might makes right. So based on the latest findings in both archaeology and anthropology, Wingrow and Graeber invite us to reject the extremes of either Hobbes saying everything was terrible and Rousseau saying everything was fabulous. Instead, they invite us to consider it was all just and always has been a lot messier, more complicated, more diverse, and more interesting than all that. And this diverse past invites us to, again, be more imaginative about the possibilities in our future. From our perspective here in 2023, it can be easy to forget that our current view of our ancient ancestors is actually of quite recent origin. It was really not until the early 19th century, a mere 200 years ago, that many Westerners thought, some still do, that the biblical book of Genesis was our best resource into deep history. So they thought the universe was about 6,000 years old and began with two Hebrew-speaking humans and a talking snake. It's important to remember that prior to the early 1800s, no one had ever heard of a dinosaur, right? Prior to just 200 years ago. Then suddenly, the bottom dropped out on human history. As we've come to discover, prehistory is not a matter of a few thousand years, it's more like 3 million years. And for most of this period, evidence is extremely limited. There are phases of literally thousands of years for which the only evidence of hominid activity is a single tooth, or perhaps a handful of pieces of shaped flint. So what do we know? Wingrow and Graeber write that the only thing we can reasonably infer about social organizations like the ones of our earliest ancestors is that it was likely extraordinarily diverse. Early humans inhabited a wide range of natural environments and would have come up with a huge number of different ways of adapting to those very diverse environments. From coastlands to tropical forests to mountains to savanna, our ancestors were far, far more physically diverse than we humans are today, and that would have also been a factor. Presumably, their social differences were even greater than their physical ones. In other words, there is no original form. There wasn't some like simple thing that we fell from. There was no Garden of Eden. No single Eve ever existed. Again, it's just messier and more complicated. And they're just trying to get us to open our minds to begin to see that. This means that Rousseau is wrong in trying to convince us that everything was just, you know, cupcakes, unicorns, and entirely rosy, and, you know, in the childlike innocence of the ancient past, and also that Hobbes was wrong, that everything was just warlike and terrible all the time. Just neither of those things are true. Both of them were probably true, but also a huge number of things every other point in between. Our past was radically diverse, and that can, again, open our imaginations for the future. Let me give you a few among many prominent examples that have led our co-authors to this conclusion, that our ancestors were really, really interesting folks. As archaeologists have closely examined graves in modern-day Russia, for example, they found that not all bodies were treated simply and the same, as you would think if Rousseau had been right about civilization. Instead, we have bodies dating back around 30,000 years that are decorated with many thousands of beads that have been laboriously worked from mammoth ivory and from fox teeth, and originally such beads would have decorated clothing made of fur and animal skin. Or, more famously, what about Stonehenge? As early as 5,000 years ago, coordination was happening over large parts of the British Isles, such that these inordinately large stones could be moved, some from as far away as Wales, which is 12 hours away by foot. So, you know, it's not, they weren't just all sitting around doing nothing, as Rousseau would hold, and they also weren't just always fighting with each other, because otherwise Stonehenge and many other examples would never have been built. Or because I lived in Louisiana for 7 years prior to moving to Maryland, I wonder if any of you have heard of the very unfortunately named, very significant archaeology site called Poverty Point. I mean, what a terrible... You have. Okay, great. If you're driving on I-20 between Shreveport and Jackson, it's really worth stopping by to see, even though Poverty Point is a terrible, terrible name. Bad marketing. So there is fascinating archaeological evidence that in that area, again, between kind of Jackson and Shreveport, 3,600 years ago, there was a very large civilization in that area. So thousands of years before Columbus sailed the ocean blue. The point is that our ancient ancestors lived neither in childlike simplicity nor in a state of perpetual depravity. And the closer we look at the past, the more diverse it turns out to be. Not to put a too fine a point on it, but it turns out that not all modern hunter-gatherers valued leisure over hard work, just as not all held easygoing attitudes about private property. It was just, again, everywhere in between. Instead, what modern archaeologists and anthropologists are coming to find is that human beings really have spent the last 40,000 years or so moving back and forth between different types of social organizations, building up hierarchies, and then dismantling them, just like we spend a lot of time thinking about how to do. So the most interesting question for us may be, how did we get so stuck today, knowing that our ancient ancestors were much more diverse? It may be that our globalized world has ironically made us all a lot more similar and gotten us all stuck. We all have to have nation states. We all have to have governments done in this way. And it's just not so. And if you want to sort of skip to the end, Graeber, you know, kind of tip his cards. He's really an anarchist, so like that's really his jam. That's really where he's trying to kind of go with all of this. But if I had to boil it down to one word, kind of in that spirit of anarchy, this 500-page book is really a cry for freedom. How can we reclaim our original freedom to experiment with ways of being together as humans instead of allowing ourselves to be locked into our current system that allows tremendous inequality to exist? It just doesn't have to be that way. There really is liberation in abandoning the story of either Rousseau or Hobbes. We are neither originally simplistic nor originally thuggish. We humans have always been, again, a lot messier, more complicated, and more interesting than all that. And opening our hearts and our minds and our spirit to the diversity of the past, to me, gives me some hope for the future. In the words of our co-authors, we should keep in mind that our ancient ancestors created bureaucracies that worked on a community scale. They created cities governed by neighborhood council. They created forms of land management based on caretaking rather than ownership and extraction. These things really did exist, even if our habitual ways of looking at the past put those in the margins rather than at the center of things. Much of this book has been devoted to recalibrating those scales, to reminding us that people really did live in these unique, interesting, and creative ways for centuries, sometimes even for millennia. It's quite an inspiring story, I think, of where did we come from? Who are we? And where are we going? And I'm grateful to be on that journey with all of you of finding out where we might be going from here. So in that spirit, I invite you to rise, embody your spirit. Let's sing together a hymn that is all about we you use trying to say what kind of difference are we trying to make? What kind of religion are we trying to live? Hymn 1058, Be Ours a Religion. We'll sing it through twice.